he was an enemy, as to seem to be holding a grudge. Instead, she smiled sweetly and thanked him for his good wishes. Let him think her an innocent idiot. Meanwhile, she would make sure to have one eye on him. But soon, very soon now, she would be gone, on her year-and-a-half internship, and that would take her entirely out of the current intrigues at court. It would also make it impossible for her to deal with any of it. If Garth Theser, or Thalin, or any of the others had deeper schemes, there would be no one near Elspeth who could detect the shadow of the scheming. She would be gone, and who would watch them then?
Chapter 2 3 weeks to investiture. Only 3 weeks, but they seemed like 3 years, at least to Talia. There was an elaborate ceremony of oaths and bindings to memorize, but that wasn't the worst of it. Talia's main function at this particular rite would be, apparently, to perform the original duties of heralds, the duties they had held in the days before Valdemar founded his kingdom, to announce each dignitary by name and all ranks and titles before escorting him or her to the foot of the throne. This was, of course, the lesser of her twin functions. In reality, the more important would be using her empathic gift to assess, and one hoped, neutralize, any danger to the queen and heir from those about to come within striking distance of them. The full high court ceremonial costumes included a wide variety of instruments of potential mayhem and assassination. There was one small problem with this. Talia was farm-bred, not highborn. The elaborate tabards of state that a highborn child could read as easily as a book were little more than bewildering patterns of gold and embroidery to her eyes, and she would be dealing with nobles who were very touchy over their titles and apt to take affront if even the least and littlest were eliminated. That meant hours closeted in Harold Kirill's office, sitting until her behind went numb on one of the hard wooden chairs he favored, memorizing plate after plate from the state book of devices until her eyes were watering. She fell asleep at night with the wildly colored and imaginative beasts, birds, and plants spinning in mad dances behind her eyes. She woke in the morning with Kirill's voice echoing out of her dreams, inescapably drilling her. She spent at least another hour of every day in the stuffy council chamber with the counselors engaged in pointless debate about this or that item of protocol for the coming ceremony until she wanted to scream with frustration. Elspeth, at least, was spared this nonsense. She had quite enough on her plate with her new round of collegium classes and duties. For the next 5 years or so, once the ceremony was complete, she would be neither more nor less important nor cosseted than any other trainee, within certain limitations. She would still be attending council sessions once she'd settled in, and certain high court functions. But these were far more in the nature of duties rather than treats, and were, in fact, things Talia reckoned that Elspeth would really rather have foregone if she'd had any choice in the matter. When Talia had taken the opportunity to check on her, the girl seemed well content. She was surely enjoying the newfound bond with her companion, Gwenna. Karen had told Talia that every free moment saw the two of them out in the field together, which was exactly as it should be. But there was one unsettling oddity about the council sessions that kept them from sending Talia to sleep, an oddity that, in fact, was contributing to an uneasiness ill-suited to the general festive atmosphere that hovered over court and collegium. Talia was catching counselors and courtiers alike, giving her bewildered, almost fearful glances when they thought she wasn't watching. If it had not happened so frequently, she might have thought she was imagining it, but scarcely a day passed without someone watching her with the same attention they might have given to some outre creature that might prove to be dangerous. It troubled her, and she wished more than once for Skiff and his talents at spying and subterfuge. But Skiff was furlongs away at very best, so she knew she'd have to muddle along beneath the suspicious glances, and hope that whatever rumors were being passed about her, and she had no doubt that they were about her, would either be put to rest or come to light where she could confront them.
Another goodly portion of each day, she spent helping to train a young healer, Renee, who was to substitute for her while she was gone on her internship circuit. Renee, like Talia, was a mind healer. She could never replace Talia, not without being a herald herself, but she could and would try to keep her senses alert for heralds in stress and distress and get them somewhat sorted out. And last but by no means least, there were exhausting bouts with Albrecht, all with the express purpose of getting both Talia and Elspeth prepared for any kind of assassination attempts that might occur.
"I really don't understand why you're doing this," Elspeth said one day, about a week from the date of the ceremony. "After all, I'm the one who's the better fighter."
She had been watching from a vantage point well out of the way, sitting cross-legged on one of the benches in the cell, against the wall. Talia was absolutely sodden with sweat, and bruised in more places than she cared to think about, and, for a wonder, Albrecht wasn't in any better condition than she. Albrecht motioned to Talia that she could rest, and she sagged to the floor where she stood.
"Appearances,"
he said.
"Partially. I do not wish that any save the heralds should know how skilled you truly are. That could be the saving of your life one day. Also, it is tradition that crowned heads do not defend themselves. That is the duty of others."
"Unless there's no other choice." Albrecht nodded.
Elspeth sighed.
"I'm beginning to wish I wasn't heir now. It doesn't look like I'm going to be allowed to have any fun."
"Catling," Talia panted. "If this is your idea of fun, you're welcome to it."
Elspeth and Albrecht exchanged rueful glances that said, as plainly as words, "She'll never understand," and made shrugs so nearly identical that Talia was hard put to keep from laughing. Finally, the day arrived for the long-awaited and dreaded rite of Elspeth's formal investiture as heir. The fealty ceremony was scheduled for the evening, with a revel to follow. Talia, as usual, was running late. She dashed from her last drilling session with Kirill to the bathing room, then up to her tower suite, taking the steps two at a time. She thanked the gods when she got there that one of the servants had had the foresight to lay out her gown and all its accoutrements, else she'd have been later still. She donned the magnificent silk and velvet creation with trepidation. She'd never worn high court ceremonials in her life, though she'd helped Elspeth into her own often enough. She faced the mirror, balancing on one foot while she tied the ribbons to the matching slippers around the ankle of the other.
"Oh, bloody hell," she sighed.
She knew what a courtier ought to look like, and she didn't.
"Well, it's going to have to do. I just wish..."
"You wish what?" Jerry and Karen rapped on the side of the tower door and poked their heads around the edge of it. Talia groaned. Jerry looked the way she wished she looked, gowned and coiffed exquisitely, every chestnut hair neatly twisted into a high court confection and precisely in place.
"I wish I could look like you, stunning instead of stunned."
Jerry laughed. To look at her, no one would ever guess this lady was nearly the equal of Albrecht in neatly dissecting an opponent with any weapon at hand.
"It's all practice, love. Want some help?"
Her green eyes sparkled. "I've been doing this sort of nonsense since I was old enough to walk, and Mama usually commandeered all the servants in the house to attend her preparations, so I had to learn how to do it myself."
"If you can make me look less like a plowboy, I will love you forever."
"I think," Jerry replied merrily, "that we can manage at least that much." For the next half hour, Talia sat on her bed in nervous anticipation as arcane things happened to her hair and face, while Jerry and Karen exchanged mysterious comments. Finally, Jerry handed her a mirror.
"Is that me?"
Talia asked in amazement, staring at the worldly sophisticate in the mirror frame. She could scarcely find a trace of Jerry's handiwork, yet somehow she had added experience and a certain dignity without adding years or subtracting freshness. Replacing her usual disordered tumble of curls was a fashionable creation threaded through with a silver ribbon.
"Do I dare move? Is it all going to come apart?"
"Havens, no," Jerry laughed.
That's what the ribbon's for, love. It isn't likely to happen this time, praise the Lord, but you know very well what your duty is in an emergency. The Queen's Own is supposed to be able to defend her monarch at sword point, then calmly clean her blade on the loser's tunic and go right back to whatever ceremony was taking place. That's why your dress is ankle length instead of floor length, has no train, and the sleeves detach with one pull. Yes, they do. Trust me. I ought to know. I supervised the making of it. It's been a long time since we've had a female monarch's own, and nobody knew exactly how to modify high court gear to suit. At any rate, you could work out now with Albrecht without one lock coming loose or losing any part of the costume you didn't want to lose. But don't rub your eyes, or you'll look like you've been beaten. She gathered her things. We'd better be moving if we don't want to get caught in the mob. And you'd better take care of the important part of your costume, childing, Karen warned as they started down the stairs. Talia had not needed the reminder. The rest of her accessories were already laid out and waiting. A long dagger in a sheath strapped around her waist and along her right thigh that she could reach. As she carefully determined, through a slit in her dress, was the first weapon she donned. Then came paired throwing knives in quick-release sheaths for both arms, gifts from Skiff, which he had shown her how to use long ago. Even Albrecht admitted that Skiff had no peer when it came to his chosen weapons. Lastly were two delicate stilettos, furnished with winking, jeweled ornaments that she inserted carefully into Jerry's handiwork. No herald was ever without a weapon, especially not the Queen's Own, as Karen had reminded her. The life of more than one monarch had been saved by just such precautions. Just as Talia was about to depart, there was a knock at her door. She opened it to find Dean Elkarth standing on her threshold. Towering over him, fair and raven heads side by side, lit by the lantern that cast its light beside her door and looking like living representatives of day and night, were Dirk and Chris. Talia had not heard that either of them had returned from the field, and surprise stilled her voice as she stared at the unexpected visitors.
"Neither of these gallants seems to have a lady," the dean said with mischief in his eyes, "and since you have no escort, I thought of you immediately."
"How thoughtful," Talia said dryly, finally regaining the use of her wits and knowing there was more to it than that. "I don't suppose you had any other motives, did you?"
"Well, since you are interning under Chris, I thought you might like to get acquainted under calmer circumstances than the last time you met."
So Chris was to be her counselor. Sherry had been right.
"Calmer," Talia squeaked. "You call this calmer?"
"Relatively speaking."
"Elkarth,"
Dirk exclaimed impatiently.
"Herald Talia, he's teasing you. He asked us to help you because we know most of the people here on site, so we can prompt you if you get lost.
We also know who the possible troublemakers are, not that we expect any problems,"
Chris continued, a smile warming his sky-blue eyes.
"But there's less likely to be any trouble with two great hulking brutes like us standing behind the Queen."
"Oh, bless you," Talia exclaimed with relief. "I've been worried half to death that I'll say something wrong or announce the wrong person and mortally offend someone."
She carefully avoided mentioning assassination attempts, though she knew all four of them were thinking about how useful the pair would be in that event. Chris smiled broadly, and Dirk executed a courtly bow that was saved from absurdity by the twinkle in his eyes as he glanced up at her.
"We are your servants, O fairest of heralds," he intoned, sounding a great deal like an overacting player in some truly awful romantic drama.
"Oh, don't be ridiculous,"
Talia flushed, feeling oddly flattered and yet uncomfortable. "You know very well that Nessa and Sherry make me look like a squirrel, and the last time you saw me, I was passing out at your feet like a silly child and probably looked like leftover pottage. Among friends, my name is Talia. Just Talia." The dean pivoted and trotted down the staircase, seemingly very pleased with himself. Chris chuckled and Dirk grinned. Both of them offered her their arms. She accepted both, feeling dwarfed between the two of them. There was barely enough room for all three of them on the stairs.
"Well, you devil, you've done it again,"
Dirk said to his partner over her head, blinking as they emerged from the half-dark of the staircase into the light of the hall.
"I get a scrawny ex-thief with an appetite like a horse for my internee, and look what you get. It's just not fair."
He looked down at her from his lofty 6.5 feet and said mournfully to her,
"I suppose now that you've gotten a good look at my partner's justifiably famous face, the rest of us don't stand a chance with you."
"I wouldn't go making any bets if I were you," she replied with a hint of an edge to her voice. "I have seen him before, you know, and you don't see me falling at his feet worshipping now, do you? My father and brothers were just as handsome. No insult meant to you, Chris, but I've had ample cause to mistrust handsome men. I'd rather you were cross-eyed or had warts or something. I'd feel a great deal more comfortable around you if you were a little less than perfect."
Dirk howled with laughter at the nonplussed expression on his friend's face.
"That's a new one for you, my old and rare. Rejected by a woman. How's it feel to be in my shoes?"
"Odd," Chris replied with good humor.
"Distinctly odd. I must say, though, I'm rather relieved. I was afraid Elkarth's mind was going, assigning me a female internee. I've only seen you once or twice, remember, and we weren't exchanging much personal information at the time. I thought you might be like Nessa. Around her, I start to feel like a hunted stag."
He suddenly looked sheepish.
"I have the feeling I may have put my foot in it. I hope you don't mind my being frank."
"Not at all. It's my besetting sin, too."
"Well, you seem unexpectedly sensible. I think we'll do all right together."
"Provided that I haven't taken a dislike to you."
Talia was just a little nettled at his easy assumption that she would fall swift prey to his admittedly charming manner. "Haven't you ever been told not to count your eggs until the hens lay them?" From the look on Chris's face, that possibility hadn't occurred to him, and he was rather at a loss to deal with it. Dirk didn't help matters by becoming hysterical.
"She's got you there, old boy," he choked. "Stars be praised! I've lived to see the day when it's you that gets put in his place and not me."
"Oh, Bright Havens, don't worry about it," Talia said, taking pity on him. "We're both heralds, for pity's sake. We'll manage to get along. It's just for a year and a half. After all, it's not as if somebody were forcing me to marry you."
Chris's expression was indescribable when Talia spoke of being forced to marry him as if it were something distasteful.
"I'm fairly sure you didn't insult me, but that certainly didn't sound like a compliment,"
he complained forlornly.
"I'm beginning to think I prefer Nessa's attitude after all."
By now, they'd had to stop in the middle of the hall, as Dirk was doubled over and tears were streaming down his face. Both of them had to pound on his back in order to help him catch his breath again.
"Holy Astera!" he gasped. "This is something I never expected to see or hear. Phew!"
He somehow managed to look both contrite and satisfied at the same time.
"Forgive me, partner, it's just that seeing you as the rejected one for a change, you should have seen your own face. You look like you'd swallowed a live toad."
"Which means that nothing worse can happen to him for the rest of the week. Now look, none of this is getting us to the ceremony,"
Talia pointed out, "and we're already running late."
"She's right again," Dirk said, taking her arm. "What do you mean, again?"
Chris asked suspiciously as they hurried to the Great Hall. Fortunately, their arrival at the door of the Great Hall prevented his having to answer that question. Dirk had been having a little trouble sorting out some very odd feelings from the moment that Talia had answered her door. The last time he'd seen the Queen's Own, she'd fainted from total exhaustion practically at his feet, after having undergone a considerable mental and emotional ordeal. He had learned afterward that she had experienced at first hand the murder of the Herald courier Ilsa, and saved Ilsa's life-mate Karen from death-willing herself in shock. Then, without a pause for rest, she had mentally guided him and his partner to the spot where Ilsa had been slain. This slight, fragile-seeming woman-child had aroused all of his protective instincts, as well as his admiration for her raw courage. He'd carried her up to her room himself, and made certain she was safely tucked into her bed, then left medicinal tea ready for her to brew to counteract the inevitable reaction headache she'd have when she woke. He'd known at the time she'd exhausted all her resources. When he heard the whole story later in the day, he'd been flabbergasted at her courage and endurance. And she was so very frail-looking. It was easy to feel protective about her, even though her actions gave the lie to that frail appearance. At least, he thought at the time that it was only his protective instincts that she aroused. But the sight of her this time had seemed to stir something a bit more complicated than that, something he wasn't entirely sure he wanted to acknowledge. So he diffused the situation as best he could by clowning with Chris. But even while he was bent double with laughter, there was a vague disquiet in the back of his mind, as though his subconscious was trying to warn him that he wasn't going to be able to delay acknowledgement for long. Talia was refusing to allow her nerves to show, but they were certainly affecting her despite her best efforts. She was rather guiltily hoping Chris had realized that she had been taking some of that nervousness out on him. The great hall, tables cleared away and benches placed along the walls, with every candle and lantern lit, gleamed like a box made of gold. The courtiers and notables were dressed in their finest array, jewels and silver and gold ornaments catching the light and throwing it back so that the assemblage sparkled like the contents of a high-born dame's jewel box. Prominent among the gilded nobles were the bright scarlet of bards, the emerald green of healers, the bright blue of the uniforms of high-ranking officers of the guard and army, and the brilliant white of heralds. Each of those to be presented wore over his or her finery the stiff tabard, heavy with embroidery, that marked a family or guild association. The men and women of the guards, standing duty in their sober midnight blue and silver, ringed the walls, a dark frame for the rest. The Queen's Own and her escorts assumed their places behind the thrones, Talia in her place behind and to Selene's right, Chris and Dirk behind and to either side of her. Talia had a feeling that the three of them made a very impressive and reassuring sight to those who had come here, fearing to see weakness. But there was uneasiness, too. The uneasiness she had been sensing for the past 3 weeks magnified, and she could not, for the life of her, fathom the reason. The ceremony began. Talia determined to ignore what she could not change, and did her best to appear somehow both harmless and competent. She wasn't sure just how successful she was, but some of the background of general nervousness did seem to decrease after a while. She tried to will some confidence into the young heir, who was beginning to wilt under the strain. She tried to catch her eyes and give her a reassuring smile, but Elspeth's expression was tight and nervous, and her eyes were beginning to glaze. For Elspeth was not faring as well as Talia. The ceremony demanded that she respond to each of her new liegemen with some sort of personalized speech, and about halfway through, she began running out of things to say. Chris was the first, with his musician's ear for cadence, to notice her stumbling and hesitating over her speeches. As the next worthy was being brought before her, he whispered, "His sons just presented him with his first grandchild." Elspeth cast him a look of undying gratitude as she moved to receive this oath. As the gouty lord rose with difficulty from his knees, she congratulated him on the blessed event. The gentleman's expression, as he was escorted away, was compounded of equal parts of startlement and pleasure, for he'd no notion that anyone knew other than the immediate members of his family. Elspeth decided at that moment that Chris was fully qualified for elevation to sainthood, and beamed quickly at both of the heralds before the next notable arrived. Dirk caught on immediately and supplied the information for the next. Chris countered with intelligence for the following two. Elspeth began to sparkle under the gratified looks of the courtiers, reviving as quickly as she'd wilted, and Chris and Dirk began to keep score in the impromptu contest. The queen seemed to find it all she could do to keep a straight face. Finally, the last dignitary made his oath, and all three heralds took their places with the circle to swear their oaths en masse. The healers and bardic circles followed them, Then the various clerics and priests made vows on behalf of their orders and devotees, and the long ceremony was at last complete, without a mishap. The queen's party retired from the dais, leaving it to instrumentalists of the bardic circle, who immediately struck up a dance melody. Talia joined Elspeth in the window alcove, furnished with velvet-padded benches that was reserved for the queen's entourage.
"What were you three up to?" she asked curiously. "I was too far away to hear any of it, but you certainly seem to be having a good time." "These two heralds that came as your escort, they were wonderful!" Elspeth bubbled. "I ran out of things to say, and they told me exactly what I needed to know. Not big things, but what was most important to them right now, the lords and so forth, I mean. Then they started making a contest out of it, and that was what was so funny, them arguing back and forth about how much something was worth in points. Mother could hardly keep from laughing."
"I can imagine." Talia grinned. "Who won?"
"I did," Chris said from behind her. "You wouldn't have if I'd thought of the sheep first,"
Dirk retorted.
"Sheep?" Talia said inquisitively. "Sheep? Do I want to know about this?"
Dirk snickered, and Chris glared at him.
"It's perfectly harmless,"
Chris answered, with just a hint of irritation.
"When Lady Fiona's husband died, she and Guildmistress Arrowell started a joint project to boost the fortunes of her family and Arrowell's branch of the Weavers' Guild. They imported some sheep with an especially soft and fine fleece, much like lamb's wool from Out Kingdom, quite far south. They've finally succeeded in adapting them to our harsher winters. The spring lambing more than doubled their flock, and it seems that everyone is going to want stock or fabric of the wool."
"That's not what we came here for," Dirk said firmly. "Sheep and discussions of animal husbandry. Keep your filthy thoughts to yourself, partner. My filthy thoughts. Who was the one doing all the chortling a few minutes ago? Do not belong at a revel. I claim the first dance with you, Talia, by virtue of the fact that my partner is going to have you all to himself for a year and more. And since that leaves me partnerless..." Chris added, "I would very much like to claim our newest chosen for the same purpose."
"Mother?"
Elspeth looked pleadingly at the queen. Chris's stunning good looks had made more than a slight impression on her, and that he should want to dance with her was a distinct thrill.
"My dear, this is your celebration. If you want to ride your companion around the Great Hall, you could even do that, provided you're willing to face the Seneschal's wrath when he sees the hoof marks on his precious wood floor."
Without waiting for further permission, Chris swept the girl into the dance. Dirk lifted an inquisitive eyebrow at Talia.
"Oh, no!" Talia laughed. "You don't know what you're asking. I dance like a plowboy. I have no sense of rhythm, and I ruin my partner's feet."
"Nonsense," Dirk replied, shaking unruly blonde hair out of his eyes. "You just never had the right partner."
"Which is you. And I thought Chris was vain."
"My dear Talia,"
he countered, swinging her onto the floor.
"Truth can hardly be considered in the same light as vanity. I have it on the best authority that my dancing more than compensates for my looks."
Shortly, Talia was forced to admit that he was absolutely correct. For the first time in her experience, she began to enjoy a dance. It was almost magical, the way they seemed to move together. Dirk didn't seem displeased by her performance either, as he yielded her to other partners with extreme reluctance. Chris, on the other hand, despite yearning glances from nearly every young woman present, danced only with women far older than himself, or with Elspeth or Talia.
"I hope you don't mind being used like this,"
he said contritely, after the sixth or seventh dance.
"Used?"
she replied, puzzled.
"As a shield, I'm dancing with you to keep from being devoured by them."
He nodded toward a group of court beauties, languishing in his direction.
"I can't dance just with beldams. Elspeth has to take other partners, and the only heralds I can trust not to carry me off are Karen, Sherry, and you, and those other two don't dance."
"It's nice to know I'm wanted," she laughed up at him. "Did I just
put my foot in it again.
No, not really. And I don't mind being used. After all, by now they all know we're assigned together, so they'll assume we're getting acquainted. You can avoid people without anyone's feelings being hurt.
You do understand,
he said, relieved.
I hate to hurt anyone's feelings, but they all seem to think if they just throw themselves at me hard enough, I'll have to take one of them. Short-term, long-term, it doesn't seem to matter. Nobody ever seems to wonder what I want.
Well, what do you want? Talia asked.
The Collegium, he replied, to Talia's amazement. That's where most of my time and energy go, and where I want them to go. I do a lot of studying on my own. History, administration, law. I'd like to be Elkarth's replacement as dean and historian when he retires, and that takes a lot of preparation. I don't have much free time, certainly none to spend on games of courtly love, or shepherd in the hay.
Talia looked at him with new respect. That's marvelous. Elkarth's job is the hardest and most thankless I can think of. In some ways, it's even worse than mine. You might just be the one to handle it. I don't think you can serve the Collegium and still give another person
the amount of attention a decent pairing needs,
he finished for her.
Thank you. Do you know you're the first person besides Dirk who didn't think I was out of my mind?
But what would you do if you did find someone you wanted?
I don't know. Except that isn't likely to happen. Face it, Talia. Heralds seldom form permanent attachments to anyone or anything. We're friends always, and sometimes things get more intense than that, but it doesn't last for long. Maybe it's because our hearts are given first to our companions, then to our duty, and I guess there aren't too many of us with hearts big enough for a third love. Non-heralds don't seem to be able to grasp that. Not too many heralds do, for that matter. But look around you. Cheryl and Karen are the only life-bonded couple I can think of, and I wouldn't be willing to settle for less than what they've got. Which is why I'm hiding behind you.
You can't hide forever.
I don't have to, he replied whimsically. Just till the end of the revel. After that, I'll be safely in the field, accompanied solely by the only person I've met who thinks I'd be better off cross-eyed and covered with warts.
Dirk reclaimed her after that. It was during that dance that she noticed the number of white-clad bodies was rapidly diminishing. "Where's everyone gone?" she asked him, puzzled.
"It's not often that we get this many of us together at one time," he replied. "So as people get tired of dancing, we slip off to our own private party. Want to go?"
"Bright heavens, yes," she replied with enthusiasm.
"Let me catch Chris's eye."
He moved them closer to where Chris was dancing with a sprightly grandmother and tilted an eyebrow toward the door. When Chris nodded, Dirk arranged for them to end the dance next to the exit as the musicians played the final phrase. Chris joined them after escorting his partner to her seat.
"I like that one. She kept threatening to take me home, feed me proper, and then train me right. And I know she wasn't talking about dancing or manners."
He laughed quietly.
"I take it Talia's ready to go. I am."
"Good. Then we're all agreed,"
Dirk replied.
"Talia, go get changed into something comfortable. Find something to sit on and an old cloak in case we end up outside. If you play any instruments, bring them too. Then meet us in the library."
"This is like the Littles' game of spy," she giggled.
"You're not far wrong," Chris answered. "We go to great lengths to keep these parties private. Now hurry, or we'll leave without you."
She gathered her skirts in both hands and ran lightly down the halls of the palace. When she reached her tower, she again took the steps two at a time. She paused only long enough in her room to light a lamp before unlacing her dress and sliding out of it. Even though she was in a hurry, she hung it up with care. There was no use in ruining it with creases. She changed into the first things that came to hand. She freed her hair from the ribbon, letting it tumble around her face while she carefully stored My Lady in her case, and stuck her shepherd's pipe in her belt. She slung the carrying strap of the harp case over her shoulder, an old, worn wool cloak from her trainee days over all, picked up one of her cushions, and was ready to go. Well, almost. Remembering what Jerry had said about the cosmetics, she stopped at the bathing room at the base of the tower for a quick wash, then ran for the library. When she swung open the door to the library, she discovered that the other two had beaten her there, but then they probably didn't have several flights of stairs to climb. Chris was all in black and looking too poetic for words. Dirk was in mismatched bluish grays that looked rather as if he'd just left them in a heap when he'd picked up his clean laundry, which in fact was probably the case. Both of them looked up at the sound of the door opening.
"Talia, God, you don't dawdle like my sisters do,"
Dirk greeted her.
"Come over here and we'll let you in on the secret."
Talia crossed the room to where they were standing, the first study cubicle.
"The first to leave always meet here to decide where we're going to convene," Dirk explained,
"and they leave something telling the rest of us where that is. In this case, it's this." He showed her a book left on the table, on harness making.
"Let me guess," Talia said. "The stable."
"Close. The tack shed in Companion's Field. See? It's open at the chapter on the special bridles we use,"
Chris explained.
"Last time they had to leave a rock on top of a copy of a religious text. We used the half-finished temple down near the river because we'd met too often around here. A bit cold for my liking, though I'm told those currently keeping company enjoyed keeping each other warm."
Talia smothered giggles as they slipped outside. The windows of the tack shed had been tightly shuttered so that no light leaked out to betray the revelry within. Both fireplaces had been lighted against the slight chill in the air and as the main source of illumination. The three of them slipped in as quietly as possible to avoid disturbing the entertainment in progress, a tale being told with some skill by a middle-aged herald whose twin streaks of gray, one at each temple, stood out startlingly in the firelight.
"It'll be quiet tonight," Chris whispered in Talia's ear. "Probably because the palace revel turned into such a romp. Our revels tend to be the opposite of the official ones."
Heralds were sprawled over the floor of the tack shed in various comfortable poses, all giving rapt attention to the storyteller. There seemed to be close to 70 of them, the most Talia had ever seen together at one time. Apparently, every herald within riding distance had arranged to be here for the fealty ceremony. The storyteller concluded his tale to the sighs of satisfaction of those around him. Then, with the spell of the story gone, many of them leaped up to greet the newcomers, hugging the two men or grasping their hands with warm and heartfelt affection. Since they were uniformly strangers to Talia, she shrank back shyly into the shadows by the door.
"Whoa there, slow down, friends,"
Dirk chuckled, extricating himself from the press of greeters.
"We've brought someone to meet all of you."
He searched the shadows, found Talia, and reaching out a long arm, pulled her fully into the light.
"You all know we've finally got a true queen's own again, and here she is."
Before anyone could move to greet her, there was a whoop of joy from the far side of the room, and a hurtling body bounced across it, vaulting over several heralds who laughed, ducked, and protected their heads with their arms. The leaper reached Talia and picked her up bodily, lifting her high into the air and setting her down with an enthusiastic kiss.
"Skiff!"
she gasped.
"Every inch of me!"
Skiff crowed.
But you're so tall!"
When he'd gotten his whites, Skiff hadn't topped her by more than an inch or two. Now he could easily challenge Dirk's height.
"I guess something in the air of the south makes things grow, 'cause I sure did last year,"
Skiff chuckled.
"Ask Dirk. He was my counselor." "Grow, bright stars, grow is too tame a word,"
Dirk groaned.
"We spent half our time keeping him fed. He ate more than our mules." "You've done pretty well yourself, I'd say,"
Skiff went on, pointedly, ignoring Dirk.
"You looked fine up there, made us all damn proud."
Talia blushed, glad it wouldn't show in the dim light.
"I've had a lot of help,"
she said, almost apologetically.
"It takes more than a lot of help, and we both know it,"
he retorted.
"Well, hellfire, this isn't the time or place for talk about work. You two, you know the rules. Entrance fee."
Dirk and Chris were laughingly pushed to the center of the room as the storyteller vacated his place for them.
"Anybody bring a harp?"
Chris called.
"Mine's still packed. I just got in today."
"I did,"
Talia volunteered, and eager hands reached out to convey the harp, still in the case, to Chris.
"Is this? This can't be my lady, can it?"
Chris asked as the firelight gleamed on the golden wood and the clean, delicate lines.
"I wondered who Jadis had left her to."
He ran his fingers reverently across the strings, and they sighed sweetly.
She's in perfect tune, Talia. You've been caring for her. She deserves.
Without waiting for an answer, he began playing an old lullaby. Jadis had been a better player, but Chris was surprisingly good for an amateur and much better than Talia. He made an incredibly beautiful picture, with the golden wood gleaming against his black tunic and his raven head bent in concentration over the strings. He was almost as much a pleasure to watch as to listen to.
"Any requests?"
he asked when he'd finished.
"Sun and shadow,"
several people called out at once.
"All right," Dirk replied, "but I want to volunteer to sing Shadow Dancer. The last time I did it, I was hoarse for a month."
"I could," Talia heard herself saying, to her surprise.
"You?"
Dirk seemed both pleased and equally surprised.
"You're full of amazing things, aren't you?"
He made room beside himself, and Talia picked her way across the crowded floor, to sit shyly in the shadow he cast in the firelight. Sun and Shadow told of the meeting of two of the earliest heralds, Rothus Sunsinger and Lythe Shadow Dancer, long before they were ever chosen and while their lives still remained tangled by strange curses. It was a duet for male and female voice, though Dirk had often sung it all himself. It was one of those odd songs that either made you hold your breath or bored you to tears, depending on how it was sung. Dirk wondered which it would be tonight. As Talia began her verse in answer to his, Dirk stopped wondering. There was no doubt who'd trained her. The deft phrasing that made the most of her delicate, slightly breathy voice showed Jadis's touch as clearly as the harp he'd left her. But she sang with something more than just her mind and voice, something the finest training couldn't impart. This was going to be one of the magic times. Dirk surrendered himself to the song, little guessing that he was surpassing his own best this night as well. Chris knew, as he accompanied them, and he wished there was a way to capture the moment for all time. The spontaneous applause that shook the rafters startled both Dirk and Talia out of the spell the music had wrapped them in. Dirk smiled with more than usual warmth at the tiny female half hiding in his shadow, and felt his smile returned.
"Well, we've paid our forfeit,"
Chris said, cutting short the demands for more.
"It's somebody else's turn now."
"That's not fair," a voice from the back complained. "How could any of us possibly follow that?"
Someone did, of course, by changing the mood rather than ruining it by trying to sustain it. A tall, bony fellow borrowed Talia's pipe to play a lively jig, while two men and a woman bounded into the center to dance to it. That seemed to decide everyone on a dancing set. Talia reclaimed her pipe to join Chris, someone with a gittern and Jerry on tambour, in a series of very lively round dances of the village festival variety. As these were both strenuous and of an accelerated tempo, those who had felt lively enough to dance were soon exhausted and ready to become an audience again. Those who didn't feel up to entertaining paid their entrance fee in food and drink. Talia saw a good many small casks of wine, cider, and ale ranged along the walls, and with them, baskets of fruit, sausages, or bread and cheese. Stray mugs and odd cups were always accumulating in the tack shed, especially during the hot summer months, when heralds and students were likely to need a draft of cool water from the well that supplied the companions' needs at this end of the field. These handy receptacles were filled and refilled, and passed from hand to hand with a gay disregard for the possibility of colds or fever being passed with the drink. Like Talia, most of the heralds had brought cushions from their quarters. These and their saddles and packs were piled into comfortable lounges that might be shared or not. A few murmurs from some of the darker corners made Talia hastily avert her eyes and close her ears, and she recalled Dirk's earlier comments about heralds keeping each other warm. From time to time, some of these rose from the dark, and either left for more private surroundings or rejoined those by the two fires. And over all was an atmosphere of belonging. There was no one here that was not cared for and welcomed by all the rest. It was Talia's first exposure to a gathering of her fellows under pleasant circumstances, and she gradually realized that the feeling of oneness extended outside the walls as well.
to the companions in the field, and beyond that, to those who could not be present this night. Small wonder, with such a warmth of brotherhood to bask in, that the heralds had deserted the main revelry for this more intimate celebration of their joy at the choosing of the heir. It was enough to make her forget the strange uneasiness that had been shadowing her the past 3 weeks. As soon as she could manage it, Talia retrieved Skiff from a knot of yearmates who seemed bent on emptying a particular cask by themselves. "Let's go up to the loft," she said, after scanning that perch and ascertaining that none of the amorous had chosen it themselves. "I don't want to disturb anybody, but I don't want to leave either." The loft was little more than a narrow balcony that ran the length of one side and gave access to storage places in the rafters. Talia noticed immediately that Skiff, very uncharacteristically, kept to the wall on the stairs and put his back against it when they reached the loft itself.
"Lord and lady, it's good to see you,"
he exclaimed softly, giving her a repeat of his earlier hug. "We weren't sure we'd make it back in time. In fact, we left all the baggage and the mules back at the resupply station, took only what Simrian already could carry besides ourselves. I've missed you, little sister. The letters help, but I'd rather have been able to talk with you, especially..." Talia could sense him fighting a surge of what could only be fear.
"Especially?"
"After the accident."
She moved closer to him, resting both her hands on his. She didn't have to see him to know he was pale and white-knuckled.
"Tell me."
"I can't."
She lowered her shields. He was spiky inside with phobic fears of storms, of entrapment, and most of all, of falling. In the state he was in now, she doubted he'd be able to look out a second-story window without exerting iron control, and this from the young man who'd led her on a scramble across the face of the second story of the palace itself one dark night.
"Remember me, what I am. Just start at the beginning. Take it slowly. I'll help you face it down."
He swallowed.
It started with a storm. We were caught out on the trail in the hills. Hills, huh? More like mountains. Gods, it was dark. Rain was pouring down so hard, I couldn't even see Simri's ears. Dirk had point. The mules were next. I was tail. It was supposed to be the safest place. We were more or less feeling our way along, sheer rock on one side of us, ravine on the other.
Talia had herself in half-trance, carefully extending herself into his mind. He was fighting down his fear as he spoke and beginning to lose to it.
"The trail just crumbled right under Simri's hooves. We fell. There wasn't even time to yell for help."
Gently, Talia touched the fear, took it into herself, and began working away at it. It was like knife-edged flint, all points and slicing surfaces. As softly as flowing water and as inexorably, she began wearing away at it, dulling it, muting it.
"We ended up wedged halfway down. Simri was stunned. I'd broken my arm and most of my ribs, I think. I don't remember much. It hurt too much to think. And where I was stuck, there was a flood of water pouring down the wall like a young waterfall. You know I don't mind speak too well, and Dirk's gift isn't mind speech anyway. I couldn't get hold of myself enough to call for help that way, and it was impossible to be heard over the storm."
He was shaking like a reed in a windstorm. She put her arm around his shoulders, supplying a physical comfort as well as the mental.
"But Dirk found you," she pointed out.
"The gods alone know how. He had no reason to think we were still alive."
The tension was rapidly draining out of him as Talia shielded him from the phobic memories. Not enough to make him forget, but enough to make them less real, less obsessive.
"He got ropes around both of us and anchored us where we were. Used something to divert the water away from me and stayed with us, hanging on with his teeth and toenails until the storm was over. Then he got blankets over us and sent Aridi off for help while he got me back up to the trail. I don't remember that part at all. I must have blacked out from the pain."
His voice sounded less strained. The fear was nearly conquered now. Time to diffuse the rest of it.
"You must have looked like a drowned rat," she replied with a hint of chuckle.
I know you have a fetish for cleanliness, but don't you think that was overdoing it a bit?
He stared at her in surprise, then began to laugh, shakily. The laughter was half tears as the last of the tension was released. Hysterics, yes, but long needed. She held him quietly until the worst passed, and he could see past the tears to her face, childlike in the half-dark. The paralysis of fear that Skiff had lived with on a daily basis for the past several months had all but choked the voice out of him as he tried to tell Talia what had happened that awful night. He'd suffered nightmare replays of the incident at least one night a week ever since. It had taken all of his control to repeat it to her, at least at first. But then gradually the words had begun to flow more freely. The fear had slowly loosed its grip on him. As he neared the end of his narrative, he began to realize what Talia had done. It was gratitude, as much as release, that shook the tears from him then.
You did it to me, didn't you? Fix me like you did with Fostel and the rest of them.
Mm-hmm, she nodded, touching his hair in the dark. I didn't think you'd mind.
No more nightmares.
No more nightmares, big brother. You won't find yourself wanting to hide in a closet during storms anymore, and you'll be able to look down over cliffs again. In fact, you'll even be able to tell the story in a week or two without shaking like a day-old chick, and it should make a good tale to earn the sympathy of a pretty lady with.
You're unbelievable,
he said at last, holding her tightly. So what are you? To have been coping with all that fear all this time and not letting it get the best of you. They sat that way for some time, before the murmur of voices below them recalled them to their surroundings.
Hellfire! This is supposed to be a party, and you're supposed to be enjoying it, Skiff said.
I am, now that you're all right. She rose to her feet and gave him a hand up. Well, I'm going back to the singing, and it seems to me that your yearmate Mavry is looking a bit lonely.
So she is,
he replied, peering down into the lighted area.
Think I'll go keep her company.
And
hot sister.
No thanks needed, love. He kissed her forehead by way of reply, then skipped lightly down the stairs of the loft and took himself off to the other side of the room, where Mavry willingly made a space for him beside her. Talia rejoined the musicians just in time for Dirk to claim her for another duet. She had to plead a dry throat before they'd let someone else take the floor. She didn't notice the passing of time until she caught herself yawning hard enough to split her head in half. When she tried to reckon up how much time had passed, she was shocked, thinking she surely must be mistaken. She slipped over to the door to look out to the east. Sure enough, there on the horizon was the first hint of false dawn. True dawn was less than an hour away. She collected her things, feeling suddenly ready to collapse. Dirk, half propped on a backrest of saddle and several old saddle blankets, seemed to be asleep as she slipped past him, but he cracked an eyelid open as she tried to ease herself out.
"Giving up?"
he asked softly. She nodded, stifling another yawn with the back of her hand.
"Enjoy yourself?"
At her enthusiastic nod, he smiled. Another of those wonderful, warm smiles that seemed to embrace her and close everything and everyone else outside of it.
I'll be heading back to my own bed before long. About this time things start to break up on their own, and don't worry about being expected on duty today. No one will be up to notice before noon at the earliest. Look over there.
He cocked an eyebrow to his left. Talia was astonished to see the Queen, dressed in old, worn leathers, sharing a cloak and resting her head in easy intimacy on the shoulder of the middle-aged storyteller. And not far from her sat Albrecht, finishing the last of a wineskin with Karen, Cheryl, and Jerry.
"How did Selene and Albrecht get in without my noticing?" Talia asked him.
"Easy. You were singing at the time. See, though, you won't be missed. Have a good long sleep. And pleasant dreams, Talia."
"And to you, Dirk," she said.
"They will be,"
he chuckled and closed his eyes again.
"They most assuredly will be."
Chapter 3 Talia didn't usually sleep long or heavily. Perhaps the cause was that she'd drunk more wine than usual. Or perhaps it was just the incredibly late hour at which she'd sought her bed. At any rate, it took having the sun shine directly into her eyes to wake her the next morning. Since the window of her bedroom faced the east, she'd positioned her bed with the headboard right under the windowsill. That way she always had the fresh air, and her face should remain out of the sunlight until well after the time she normally rose. No matter how cold the winter, she'd never been able to bear the slight claustrophobia that closed shutters induced in her, so the glazed windows themselves and the thin fabric curtaining them were all that stood between her eyes and the sun's rays, and the windows themselves were open, with the curtains moving slightly in the breeze. As she squinted groggily through the glare, she realized that it must be nearly noon, and as if to confirm this, the noon warning bell at the Collegium sounded clearly through her open window. Well, the wine she'd indulged in last night had given her a slight headache. She muttered something to herself about fools and lack of judgment and pulled her pillow over her head, tempted to go right back to sleep again. But a nagging sense of duty, and more urgently, a need to use the privy, denied her further sloth. She'd been so tired last night, this morning, that all she'd been able to do was peel off her clothing, leave it in a heap on the floor, and fall into bed. Now that she felt a little more awake, her skin crawled with the need for a bath. Her hair itched. Her mouth didn't bear thinking about. She groaned. It was definitely time to get up. She sighed, levered herself out of bed, and set about getting herself back into working condition. Sitting on the edge of the bed, she rubbed her eyes until they cooperated by focusing properly, then reached for the robe hanging on one of the posts at the foot of her bed. She wrapped it about herself, then collected the clothing on the floor. The soiled clothing went into a hamper. The servant who tended to the heralds in this section of the wing collected it and sent it to the laundry as part of her duties. And that was a luxury that was going to take some getting used to. She'd been low-born, and at the bottom of her Holderkin family's pecking order as a child, and once at the Collegium had fallen naturally in with the tradition that trainees tended to their own needs and shared the common chores. She had become habituated to doing the serving and not to being waited on herself. The warmth of the smooth wood beneath her feet was very comforting, and she decided then that she would not have any floor coverings in her new quarters. She liked the way the sun-warmed boards felt to bare feet, and she liked the way the wood glowed when the sun touched it. She rummaged in her wardrobe and draped a new, clean uniform over one arm, then bundled her bathing things into the other arm and headed for the door. The bathing room, shared by the other tower occupants, was on the bottom floor. That was another disadvantage of having selected a tower room. It was a long walk, and seemed longer for the thinking about it. Talia was the only current occupant, though. The other rooms were either unclaimed or their owners were out on circuit, so at least there wasn't going to be any competition for the facilities. Talia saw a note waiting for her on her door as soon as she opened it. Rubbing her temple in response to the ache behind her eyes, she wondered who could be the early riser after the revelry of the previous night. She took it down and began to skim through it as she headed down the stairs. What she read caused her to stop dead and reread it thoroughly. It was from Kirill.
"I realize this is notice so short as to be non-existent," he wrote, "but we've had an emergency since last night. The Herald currently riding one of the northern border sectors has had an accident, and we have no one free who knows anything about the area to cover it. Dirk can't. He's already assigned to another border sector that needs a border-bred herald too badly to reassign him elsewhere. The closest we can come is this. Since Dirk is a native of that area, Chris has visited up there fairly often, and you're of border upbringing. Since you haven't been assigned a circuit yet, it seemed to me that assigning it to you as your internship with Chris would solve our problems very neatly. However, this means that you two will have to start as soon as we can get you on the road north. Tomorrow, I hope. Please report to me right after the noon meal, or as soon as you read this note, for a briefing and some final information." Her first thought was an irreverent and irrelevant one,
She knew Kirill hadn't left the revel before her. How could he have been awake and ready to handle crises so blasted early in the morning after? Her next was more to the point. Tomorrow.